Nebraska Untapped, the source for everything educational and informational about groundwater in agriculture. If you are an ag producer or a citizen of Nebraska, this show is made for you by the Middle Republican Natural Resource District.
Now it's time for our weekly show, hosted by Heather Disming.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Season 3 of Nebraska on Tap. So this first episode that we have here is going to be with Nelson Winkle. He is out of the Central Platte NRD. He is their prescribed fire planning specialist, and he is going to give us a little 411 on the things that go into these fires to help mitigate some of the woody encroachment problems that we are having here on the prairie. Nelson really highlights some great things when it comes to burning and what steps need to be taken and how he can help out with those. And if he can't help out, how some other people in this industry can help out with those prescribed burns. Before we get into that interview, don't forget to make sure that you are like or subscribe to us so you know when we are launching our next episode. These are going to be a couple of wild months here with a lot of stuff going on for us internally here at the NRD, but we want to make sure that this education and information gets out to you folks who are listening to us. So let's get into that interview with Nelson and let's learn a little bit about prescribed fires.
Hello, my name is Nelson Winkle. I work out of the Central Platte NRD office here in Grand Island. I am a prescribed fire planning specialist, and my primary thing I work on is developing burn plans and helping to get more prescribed fire across the state, primarily in several different NRDs, including the Twin Platte, Middle Republican, Tri-Basin, Central Platte, and Lower Loop NRDs.
What have you been experiencing when it comes to interest in these prescribed burns?
Yeah, so I've been noticing interest tends to be going up as the spread of eastern red cedars continues. So does a demand by landowners to protect their rangeland and their ranching heritage. At times I see an apprehension for burning due to recent wildfires. However, I do think more people are becoming more and more aware that regular burning is needed, and it's just one of those things that's required to protect our grassland and the cattle production that it creates.
Because burning also helps go through with the grasses to regenerate themselves as well, right?
Yeah, so prescribed fire is kind of just a tool, and with those tools, it has different risks. But one of the things it can help do is it addresses the eastern red cedar encroachment, which, you know, is a big threat to the grasslands, and it helps improve forage production. And in addition to that, it can help reduce wildfire severity. So it's a great tool, but it does have risks, and a lot of those risks can be managed just through training, preparation, pre-planning, and yeah, any tool has risks associated with it.
Yeah, because most of these prescribed fires are done by professionals, right?
The ones I bring in a burn crew, at least this year I have with professionals. A lot of the time they're working with wildfires. You know, we do have a lot of like local landowners that have a lot of experience with prescribed fire. And it's just important to kind of get that experience and talk to people that have done it before. There's just a lot of pre-planning involved. The more pre-planning and work ahead of it, the more successful you'll be on the end.
And that brings up a good point too. People being involved with these things, do them once and then they get that little extra experience and then they do it again. And then if something bad like a wildfire happens, then, you know, they know what to do to help mitigate it.
And along with that lines, like, I think having the training that a prescribed fire offers is really important. A lot of landowners will group together and work together to burn each other's properties, and it's just a great landowner helping landowner collaboration. In addition to that, a lot of them will kind of develop their own little fire suppression vehicles, and those don't have to be very expensive at all. They can be pretty much just utilizing things they have already in a little bit different fashion, and it's just fun to see those all on the fire line, where the different landowners kind of created a rig that works for them. But those rigs are also very useful in like wildfire response too.
Mm-hmm.
And having that experience and knowing what to expect from fire.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing, is what to expect from fire, because sometimes fire can softly be...
maybe unpredictable?
Yeah, unpredictable sometimes, especially depending on when the wind comes through.
So fires can be pretty unpredictable. At times they seem unpredictable, but in reality, it's just a chemical reaction. And a chemical reaction is going to happen. And some of those factors, you know, when we think about a fire triangle, it's fuel, oxygen, heat.
Could you tell us a little bit about what's the difference between a prescribed burn and a controlled burn?
Yeah, so the difference between a prescribed burn and a controlled burn is a prescribed fire is one where we're trying to do for specific objectives. We're not just out there lighting things on fire because we enjoy it. The reality is it takes a lot of forethought and pre-planning and a lot of initial investment for that prescribed fire. And we're also doing it for as a tool. And so we're using it to accomplish a certain objective, whether that be to reduce just thatch buildup in a pasture, maybe we're using it to control cedars, or maybe we're using it to just kind of manage some of our grazing rotation and help attract cattle to one area and rest another. So the difference between that and a controlled burn is, you know, a controlled burn might not even be controlled. But a prescribed fire, we're definitely doing it for an objective. And if it's not meeting that objective, then we're not doing it.
And these have to have an application for the burn permit, right?
Yeah. So the way the Nebraska rules is there's a existing burn ban in place at all times. And with that burn ban, the governor lets local fire chiefs waive that burn ban. And so you can apply for a burn permit from your local fire department, and they have the option to give you a temporary permit for burning. As part of that burning requirement, you are required to have a burn plan. And that burn plan, there's lots of different things required in it. It's not too complicated, but that's all required by state statute to have that burn plan in place in order to get your burn permit.
And that's where you help out, right?
Exactly. So I can kind of help them go through a burn permit or burn plan, which they should be submitting to their local fire departments to receive that burn permit. And a burn plan, you know, it's going to be as complicated as the unit. And a burn plan is only as good as a person really putting that plan into place. So we don't like to paint ourselves into a box with that burn plan, but we want to make sure that we're being safe about it.
Because like you said earlier, you don't want it to get out of control with any type of extra fuel that might be around that you didn't plan on.
Right. So our burn plan is based on meeting that objective and what sort of safe fire parameters we can have in order to meet that objective. And then based on those parameters, we can assess of how many different fire trucks and different things we need to accomplish that burn. It's kind of just a document showing that we put a lot of thought, planning into this fire, and we just didn't go out there and drop a match.
Right, exactly, because that's when everybody starts getting scared when they see the big plume of smoke. But usually that's because what you guys are prescribed to burn is a lot of fuel there in that area, and that's why you're doing it, right?
Right. I mean, a lot of the burning we're doing is based on eastern red cedar control, because there again, we're trying to like protect our grasslands. And brush encroachment is the biggest threat to grasslands in addition to crop conversion. So in order to kill a cedar tree, we need to get it hot and kill the buds. What that's required is to have enough fuel built up over through grazing deferment, or other manipulation of the fuels so that we can get enough combustion going on, which generates heat and in turn kills those cedar trees. So the larger the cedar tree, the more fuel we need to kill it. The smaller the tree, the less fuel we need. So it's more efficient and easier to kill a small tree than a big tree. And that means that if we're thinking about how long it's going to take us to build that fuel in our grassland condition, a healthy grassland with little cedars will require less of an investment to kill those cedars and maintain that grassland than a cedar-infested grassland that has got large cedar trees and that those grasses have been kind of grazed down over time, and they need more time just to recover from that intense grazing that the cedars that took away that grass.
Right. And this ultimately falls back onto the landowner. Like you said, some of the landowners go through and help with those burns, but the landowner is responsible for that aspect of maintaining those red cedars so they don't get out of hand where you guys have to use more fuel.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, I think humans are kind of hard at understanding exponential growth. The cedar, you know, I mean, definitely cedars play an important role in some shelter belts, but they can be, you know, they put out thousands of different berries. And, you know, when we have thousands of trees putting on thousands of berries, there's a good chance that some of those are going to get established. And as soon as those other ones get established and they put on berries, then we just start getting into exponential growth. And when we look at the scale of some of our grasslands, it just becomes too much of a threshold that no person can really manage being out there cutting and clipping. So our best way to control that cedar spread is to don't put a shelter belt where it's not required. If you do have a shelter belt, put that close to your house where you can monitor it. And take out all your female cedar trees in that shelter belt. So any of them that start putting on berries, cut them out and get rid of them. And that way you can still maintain those male trees for that shelter belt, but you don't have to deal with the risk of spreading and taking over your ranch. I guess one of the questions you had asked me was, how successful have the burns been? So this spring's been kind of a tough spring. It's just been kind of a wetter than normal spring. And where we have had burns, we had really good success with them accomplishing our objectives. However, there's always a demand for more and more burns, and it's been tough, especially lately in the last few weeks, to get fires between all the wind and the rain. Mm-hmm. So, but the good news is, what grows today burns tomorrow. If we can build a lot of this fuel up, maybe we can get at it next year.
When or what seasons or what months are best for these prescribed burns?
Yeah, so this kind of goes back. There's a lot of different trade-offs as far as when to burn, and it's going to depend on your objective. Obviously, the more, I guess, drier it is and warmer it is going to give us, since there's less moisture in the grass, it's going to burn faster and hotter, which is going to release more heat, which could kill cedar trees a lot easier. However, that does imply that we have a lot bigger fire and it's faster, and so we need to have a lot more resources ready to control it. Alternatively, we can burn more and more like in the summer, I guess when we have more lightning storms and things like that historically. These fires tend to be slower, but since we're starting at like a warmer daytime temperature, we tend to get a better kill on the cedar trees too. So tends to be some more climate variability, and we're trying to figure out where exactly is the best time for prescribed fire. But I think if it's a good day to burn, it's a good day to burn. So burn when we can and when we can do it safely. And so one of the things that the burn plan like covers is what sort of winds you need. And just, you know, of the variabilities that in a fire, you know, since a prescribed fire is a chemical reaction, that's very predictable because how it's going to react to slope and the fuels and humidity, that's just a chemical reaction. But the weather, you know, the weather changes and it's just a prediction what we get. So we don't exactly know what's going to happen. We can margin in a margin of error, like a certain amount of risk, and we can make sure that we're able to accommodate that. And then people and other equipment too is just like another variability. So we want to try to get all those variabilities managed as best we can. And then we'll be all ready for a fire.
I feel like I'm bringing some stress out in you. You're like, I got to put this equation down on a paper here. You got your variability, your stress.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are all just different factors that go into it. And that's where a lot of the stress lies, is just making sure that those factors are all in agreement and in alignment. And managing people and equipment is kind of the key. And that's kind of a skill set that it takes a lot of skills and experience. So get on a burn, learn, and develop those skills.
Right. I think that's great advice to, yeah, for everybody to get on a burn and learn, because there are so many variables and you can always learn for somebody who's been doing it for a long time, especially when you guys have those professional crews joining you with everybody else helping out as volunteers.
Yeah, and it also just helps the professional crews kind of stay involved in fire during the off season, essentially. Keeps their equipment up to par and gives them a lot of experience for learning and training too, because they're just trying to learn too. I guess one of the questions you had was just like, what does your targeted field look like? Since we're really trying to deal with eastern red cedar encroachment, we're trying to look at trying to protect and enhance the biggest areas that don't have the cedar encroachment. So I really like to focus my fires on those. And by intact, I want big areas with like cedar trees less than 3 feet. Anytime we start getting like a tree that's going to be above, you know, 3 times the height of the fuel, it's going to be really tough to get enough heat to kill that tree. But then when we look at encroachment and things like that, we're looking at a large scale fire, because a large scale is going to be more effective. And so we want to go from like road to road if possible and impact 1 to 2,000 acres at a time. This really just gives us a better area to perimeter ratio and keeps that fire return interval needed to keep the cedars under control at a better level. Having a burn that's like 1 to 2,000 acres can be really tough, because that scale requires a lot of land being deferred from grazing and a lot managed for that burn. However, hindsight, it gives the most return on that investment to all those people involved. When we start dealing with like a lot of little burns, what we end up doing is we play whack-a-mole, because the seeds are just coming in from other neighboring properties, and we're really just knocking the head. So we want to go big. And then utilizing like road to roads gives us a great way, because having good access around the perimeter of the fire is really key. And then having a vegetation-free area is really important, just to enhance the safety and reduce the risk of anything getting away from us.
That makes sense. And then also, yeah, people that have to defer the grazing on those burn areas, because how long from burn to graze do they need?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So it's all about having enough heat to kill a tree. So, you know, if we have a tree that's 1 foot tall, maybe we only need 6 inches of grass to go through that.
Gotcha.
And so that's a lot easier and takes less deferment than a tree that's 4 feet tall. Mm-hmm. The other thing we need to remember is if we have a tree that's 4 feet tall and maybe our grassland condition, maybe we're going into a drought, we have other issues where it's going to take us more than 1 year to accomplish like a fuel bed or like grass heights of maybe 1.5 feet, is if it's going to take us 2 years to develop that grass that's 2.5 feet, well, that 4 foot cedar is now 6 feet. And now it's putting on berries, and now it's putting on more berries, and that's spreading the seed source all around. We're going to need an additional fire after that, and that we're just not going to be able to kill it with a fire. We're going to have a skid loader come in. We're going to have a saws. It just gets a lot more expensive. And so we really want to kill these cedars, you know, before they're at 3 feet, because once they start reaching 4 feet high, they're already putting out berries. And once they're putting out berries, you know, we're losing our window to really gain and protect that grassland. The whole Midwest here, or the Great Plains region, is struggling with this eastern red cedar. And it's kind of a new thing, because we've just been suppressing fires for so long. We've gotten away with it. But as the cedar encroachment spreads, everyone's going to need to be doing fire. It's just like the Flint Hills. There's going to be a lot of burning that needs to happen. So and resources are tight and our windows are tight. And so, you know, if we can get more acres done on fewer days, that's going to give us a bigger footprint to get ahead of the issue.
Well, and like you said, too, you have to have your fuel ratio versus the height of the tree and all those other aspects of what you need to be burning. So it's kind of almost as soon as you see that little cedar pop up, you need to be on the phone.
That's right. And if you're seeing one cedar tree coming up, chances are there's like, you know, a lot more that you're not seeing. So there's always a lot more in the grass that are kind of hidden in there. So, you know, it's better to be proactive than reactive. So yeah, be proactive.
Right. And I mean, those cedar trees, there's only a few things that will totally take them out, right? It's burning and cutting.
Right. Mechanical, you know, mechanical works great for large stuff and for scattered ones. And so obviously if you can do mechanical first and like prevent, you know, the encroachment, that's great. But at some point, if you kind of get late on it, late on the game, and those mature ones or anyone, you know, over 4 or 5 feet are putting out berries, then you got a lot of berries in areas. And yeah, so fire kind of tends to be a really competitive treatment.
Right, because like you said, especially with those berries, because you can take out a big tree, but yet if you have all those seedlings growing where you don't really see them hidden in the grass and all of a sudden they're there 2 years from now, you're like, whoa.
Yep. Yeah. So unfortunately, like a lot of our fires we're doing are coming in kind of post hoc, where we have a rangeland that's been heavily encroached and we have a lot of mature cedar trees. And so it's getting to the point where like the landowners are just realizing like, if I don't do anything, I'm not going to have any grass left. And so It's usually coming into kind of a compromised condition to start with. A lot of money is spent on mechanical control, cutting and clearing. And then it looks great for like a year, but then all those seeds that were out there from those that you cut now are germinating and growing. And then all of a sudden it's back to where it was, or not just worse. I don't think it's worse. I think it just looks worse. But then it's like really a critical need to get fire on there, because you lost all that investment that you spent on clearing. If we can get a burn on before we have those issues, that's really key.
Yeah. And if people want to do these burns, they can get a hold of their NRD or their NRCS, right?
Yes. Yep. Those are great places to start. So talk to your NRCS. They usually have some cost share available. Otherwise, your NRDs have some cost share too. Granted, it's limited cost share, so it doesn't go very far. Yeah. Talk to them. We can help get a burn plan in place and try to hook you up with the resources you need. So obviously, you know, I can't get to very many people. You know, I only bring in a small crew and it's supplemental, but neighbors helping neighbors is really the key to sustainability in this region. Figuring to see when you see that smoke, find a contact and find ways to help them and join your local PBA, your Prescribed Burn Association.
Very nice. I didn't realize there was a Prescribed Burn Association.
And if there's not, well, Mon Bayou, start one.
Right? Yeah. Hey, so you can be the president of it.
You can. You know, it just goes back to neighbors helping neighbors. And I mean, a lot of, you know, if you've got a problem, your neighbors have a problem, it's kind of a joint problem with a joint solution. It's just like kind of a cattle branding or any other threshing or some other like historical way of neighbors helping neighbors, but it's just prescribed burning now.
So that some of this stuff can be mitigated at the beginning.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Nelson, thank you so much for everything that you've let us know about today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right, some great takeaways there from Nelson when it comes to getting that prescribed fire in the books and managed. So just again, to reiterate it, it is a landowner's responsibility to make sure that these cedars are not out of control on the grassland. If you have that happen, then of course you lose grazing. And then also just remember those little seedlings are underneath the grass. You don't see them right away. And then you can have a whole bunch of trees in 5 years and not even know about it. So getting on top of things is definitely the best way to go about stuff so that you don't have to play catch up later, because catch up clearly, like Nelson said, is a little bit more expensive. So thanks again, everybody, for joining us today. Again, you can find us on our RSS feed, Spotify, podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. And if you ever have anything that you want to talk to us about, you can go to our webpage, www.nebraskaontap.com, and you can send us an email. So thanks again, everybody, for joining us here on our third season. Again, don't forget to like or subscribe so you know when we are launching a new podcast or video on YouTube so you can stay aware. So thanks again. Have a great one. Bye-bye.